This is episode 46 of Sustainable Photography. I'm Ingvild Kolnes, and I've got photographer Margaret Soraya with me today. We're talking about landscape photography and following your passion. You're listening to Sustainable Photography, where you get support and education to build your profitable business in a way that supports your way of living. I'm Ingvild Kolnes, and after 11 years as a photographer, I want to share what I've learned with you. So if you're looking for confidence, inspiration, and to-the-point tips, keep listening. For full transparency, I also want you to know that I'm a mentor with paid offers, and I might mention some of those in this episode. Margaret Soraya has been photographing the landscapes of the Highlands and Islands of Scotland for 25 years, 18 of them as a professional photographer. She's also a passionate public speaker who enjoys encouraging others to follow their passions, take time out for their photography, and use creativity as a tool for well-being. She's got a genuine desire to share and inspire, and she finds nothing better than to see others develop in their photography, begin to find their own style, and feel fulfilled through time out. Okay, Margaret, hi, and welcome to the podcast.
Hello, thank you for having me on.
Oh yeah, I'm so excited to have this conversation, and I'd love to know more about you, so maybe you can tell us a little bit about who you are and how you got started and what you've been doing so far.
Yeah, sure. So I've had quite a long time in photography. I started wedding photography about 18 years ago. So basically I'm still doing wedding photography, but it's evolved. I'm now doing elopements only. So I've stopped doing the bigger weddings. And so probably for about the past 8 years, I've wanted to evolve into landscape photography. So landscape is where my passion is. Wedding photography was always where it was like a day job, so it's great for steady income. And basically, it was self-fulfilling. I was getting the work, I got a good reputation, I didn't need to advertise, so I just carried on doing wedding photography. But sort of around about 8 years ago, I started to try and make the transition into landscape photography. So where I am now is I'm probably doing maybe about 80% landscape photography now, probably 10% weddings, really gone down. And the rest of it is, I've always done property and interior photography as well. So I've always just done everything really. But suddenly there seems to be a demand for property photography as well. So I'm doing some of that this summer, but mostly landscape work now, which is amazing because I get to live this wonderful life traveling. I travel a lot in my van. I go around to the Scottish Islands. I lead workshops and I just have a pretty great life, to be honest with you now.
It sounds like it. And landscape photography is one of those things that you always hear, like, you can't make a living from that. It's just not possible. You have to work with people for it to be profitable. So what's your thoughts when it comes to that?
I kind of agree with you actually at the moment. I think you have to be realistic about it. So obviously the thing is that when I was a wedding photographer, I was always the sole earner for the household. So I've got two boys and I was earning the income for us basically. So it was just the three of us for a very long time. So very much driven by the need to earn. So when I was looking at transitioning into landscape photography, I was doing it because my well-being and my natural love is bound up with the landscapes, being outdoors and photographing the outdoors. Absolutely love it. I wanted to be a bit more healthier. Weddings were very draining. They can be exhausting, can't they?
They can. Oh, yes.
We all know that. And so I was shooting a lot of big weddings. I don't know what the average number of weddings a year that people photograph, but I was probably about 50.
What, 50 a year?
Yeah, is that a lot?
That is an insane amount.
I mean, not all big weddings, but, you know, sort of some big ones, like some small ones. So, yeah, maybe it is a lot. So, yeah, it's just exhausting, isn't it? And you get very dependent by that seasonal nature of it as well. So there was a lot of factors going on there. I think maybe starting to think, actually, I need to be more healthy. I need to be out there doing what I really want to do. We've only got one life, and I knew that my passion really was in landscape. I've known that since I was 16, right from childhood. I've known that. I just kind of fell into wedding photography because it was secure and there's demand, isn't there? Social photography, there's demand for it. So, but when I started to really think about what I wanted to do with my life and where I wanted to go, so think, well, how can I do this? And I know I can't do this overnight because that's not going to happen because there isn't a market as such for landscape photography. Overnight. A lot of people think I'll be a landscape photographer and I'll sell prints. I've got to say it might buy you a meal out once in a while, but it's not going to pay any bills. It's very rare that people make an income who sails of photography. It would be lovely if we could, I've got to say, that would be the ideal. I'd love to do that. Just have exhibitions and sell prints. That's great. But in the real world, as far as I can see in my experience, that doesn't happen. So about 8 years ago, I started thinking, well, okay, I've got to build up my portfolio first. I've got to build up my reputation and my name and do it that way. And actually, I did that quite intuitively. And it was the right thing to do, because you can't just suddenly say, I'm a landscape photographer, I'm going to sell whatever, whether it's courses or prints overnight. The profile is the one big thing that you have to build over years. That's probably true with anything, isn't it?
It is. Yeah.
So it's the same in landscape. So I started spending more time out on the Outer Hebrides, which are the small islands off Scotland, because they have beautiful waves and beautiful beaches. And I started to do that. It's interesting. I did it through my wedding photography. So I would get a wedding booked out on the Hebrides, and I would start to stay a little bit longer. Because of the kids, I was quite tied by time at first. So I'd stay an extra day, maybe try and shoot some seascapes. And then eventually over the years, I built that up, so I was staying longer, so that the wedding photography would pay my way out there and my time on the island. And then I would invest in the time to spend shooting. So the other thing I did was I bought a van. So I built up to buying this van, which meant that I could then have longer on the islands without paying for accommodation. So, you know, we're all building up to this very, very slowly. So years of doing that, and then I'm starting to produce better work. I'm getting better all the time. And then I'm building, I concentrated on my Instagram profile, which has paid off actually. It's probably the one source of community and people that understand what I'm doing, which is amazing. It's great. So yeah, that was many, many years of that. And then it was literally in 2018, actually, which is only 4 years ago. But right now is the time. We've really got to do something now. Yeah, getting older, getting on a bit. I need to be, you know, heading into this new line. So I started my business, I called it Quiet Landscapes. And as I tell you how I did this, I did it by thinking, well, okay, there's a lot of demand for photography workshops out there. How can we be slightly different? How can I be different from everybody else and put something into this business, create something that's unique? And I did it through thinking about the why, what am I doing? What am I about? Why? I'd say that to everybody who's thinking, you know, more deeply about the business. Always go back to your why, go back to your purpose, go back to what it is behind your photography. And I did that. Another layer of that was thinking about my values. What are my values in my work? What do I want to put into this business? And it was all to do with quiet places, introverts who spend time in nature and create through being out in nature, about being kind and generous is a big one for me. Generosity, I think, is really important. So I wanted to bundle that all up and put it into this. So I started Quiet Landscapes, and it was basically taking people out to the places that I love, the Outer Hebrides, and sharing with them, teaching them. Originally, I called them retreats, and something I'd actually like to go back to. I think I'll evolve round back to that at some point, because it's also about giving people space and time to feel inspired and to feel creative.
I think an important thing to take away from that is maybe it's not possible in the way that you think, or maybe it's not so easy in the way you think, which is selling prints, but you can do it in other ways, like teaching workshops or doing other things.
Yes. And I think that it's really important to expand your mind to allow those possibilities in, because it's very easy to say, I want to be a landscape photographer, but I only want to sell prints. I don't teach people. Because I tell you, we were talking about speaking. Probably maybe say 6-8 years ago, I'd have said, oh, I can't speak in front of people. I can't write. Those were my statements that I made about myself. And a lot of us do that. We say, I'm not a XXX. You can fill that in, whatever it is. I'm not this, I'm not that. And we put ourselves in these boxes. And actually that stops us from expanding and going, well, actually, do I need to do that skill? Do I need that skill to get me to be doing the thing that I want to be doing most? And for me, I just touched on being an introvert. Speaking in front of people was horrifying, absolutely horrifying. So many years ago now, I wouldn't have wanted to speak in front of a table of four people. I wouldn't have spoken, because I was just had that real lack of confidence. But I recognize the need to teach myself to. So I started speaking in front of very, very small audiences, starting building up that confidence. And you gain confidence through the doing. And now I do talks, which it all helps my profile. So the profile then builds to being able to sell, well, whatever it is you're selling. So the workshop business for me is my main income. The other portion of the income is I have an online community, which again, created during COVID because I saw a need from people reaching out, wanting to be part of a community, a very supportive community. So I have a monthly membership, which, you know, we have people from all over the world, which is amazing. And that's very, very stable as well. So yeah, so living from landscape photography, you have to be wholeheartedly dedicated to it. And it has to be part of your passion and your great desire in life, because it consumes everything I do. And talking about that, just touching on that, I work many, many hours in a day and many, many hours in a week. And people often say, well, you need work-life balance. Somebody said this to me yesterday, actually. She said, what about work-life balance? She said, I've got a shed and I go out to work in the shed. And then at 5 o'clock, I'll shut the shed and I'll go home. And she said, but you just work in your house, wherever you are in your house, don't you? And I think you might need some distance from that. And I said, no, I don't. I have many problems in my life. One of them isn't my work, because I love my work. And I recognize when I'm getting burnt out with the computer work. But you have to have this passion, because you're going to be driving this business every moment of your waking hour, because it's in your core. If that's really what you want to do, then that's a great thing, isn't it?
I have to agree, because I'm the same way. I can work nonstop and it's never draining to me, because I love it so much. It's my passion. It's what I want to do. If I can choose what I'm going to do one day, it is to work and build like the podcast or content for my online course or whatever it is. It's what I do. It's what I most want to do. And I actually heard this from a podcast not that long ago, and it was on that topic of work-life balance. And her name is Kate Ferris. I think she lives in Wales. And she said, it's not a matter of having a work-life balance. It's about, like, work is a part of your life. It has to be a part of your life. So it's not like they're not opposites. You have to find a way to, like, incorporate it. And of course, you should have work that is so fulfilling to you that you don't want to have a break from it, as in, like, you have to take a break, because if not, you just can't do it. But of course, some parts of it, like dealing with photography clients, that is draining.
And accounts, maybe. Accounting.
Yes, definitely. Not my favorite.
No, and I totally agree with you there. It's a funny thing, isn't it? I've had a week where I haven't been working so much. I've got, saying to you earlier, I've got this new puppy, and we're painting the house and we're sorting the house and we're doing lots of things and we're doing all these things. I'm trying to get my boys ready to leave home and things like that. And I'm drained. I'm absolutely exhausted. And just this morning, I started editing one of my own podcasts. And it's like, oh, I feel better. I feel uplifted. You know, I'd like more time to do this. So actually, it's funny, isn't it?
Yeah, I think we're pretty much at the same place, because we're in the middle of doing some fixing around the house and stuff. And I'm like, oh, I don't want to do it. But doing this, it's like, yeah, I can always find the energy to do this kind of work, which is, I guess it just means that we're in the right place.
Absolutely in the right space, aren't you? And you know, when it uplifts you and you feel uplifted and you feel like, yeah, this is right. You said it, it gives you energy, just it doesn't drain the energy. Yeah, I do think I need to, and I know when I need to pull back on the draining work, which is websites, SEO, accounting. but then you just outsource. I'm learning to outsource more.
Yeah, that's something that I'm learning too. So I think it's a matter of just finding the things that you don't enjoy, or that just takes you so long that you could just spend that time doing other things. But it takes practice.
Yeah. And it's hard to find people sometimes as well. I think that's my thing. Yeah. It's finding the right person, isn't it, for the right job and fitting them in.
It is.
It's quite tricky.
Definitely. Yeah, I agree. But what about, because we've been talking about like income from landscape photography, what about selling your photography to like magazines or like stock things? Is that not a thing anymore?
No, I don't really do. I don't think stock's a thing. I think stock is a thing of the past. The last time I checked, it must have been about a year ago, and the stock was selling for like 25 pence an image. And I was like, that's ridiculous. Is that gone? I think that's gone. I think there was a day, maybe 15 years ago, when it was a viable option. I don't think it is now. I could be wrong. I could be wrong. And there could be people making money out of stock libraries. But I suppose if you're in the right ones and you've got a reputation, I don't know. But for me, that's just too time consuming in terms of cataloguing and labeling. What I want to be doing is not being on the computer as much as I possibly can. So the computer is not what I like to do when I'm sitting at a desk. I want to be out there. So then I'm thinking, well, okay, what are the options within landscape photography? So we've got the print sales, the galleries. I mean, it's very hard to get in with a good gallery. If you can get in with a good gallery, that is amazing. But you need money behind you to do that. And this is what people forget, you know, that book sales, candid sales is pretty good, but book sales, I've just published a book actually.
Oh, have you? Cool.
Yeah, I've just gone through the process of this. And again, I've come at everything from a very business-minded angle. And I feel a lot of people in the landscape world, not so much. I'm sure there are people that do. As I said, it's just my situation. I have a mortgage that's quite new. We took it on a few years ago. Expenses are very, very high, and I have this need to earn X amount per year. Some people don't have that, and that's great. That's wonderful if you don't have that. Good on you. Go and enjoy it.
Most people do, though.
Most people do. So maybe there are some people that don't have that need to earn as much as I do. There are a lot of people in landscape photography when they're maybe older, maybe retired, they maybe paid off everything and they don't have that need to earn, or they have money behind them. And I think we're seeing a lot of landscape photographers that are like that, and they're producing books and they're going into galleries, but we're forgetting the cost behind this. So I was with the Bosman Gallery and I did an exhibition a few years ago, which was an amazing opportunity. I wasn't going to say no, but that wasn't without cost. You know, you don't realize the upfront cost behind that. So we have to be hyper aware of that. And even going as far as the books, I spent a lot of time, I'm just about to make a video and write an article on this, because I think it's important that we're looking at this, because I was looking at book production. I was thinking, well, all landscape photographers, they have a nice coffee table book, don't they? And that makes you a good landscape photographer. And it's hardback and it's big. And then I'm going, well, and I looked at so many printing companies and I was like, how do you match these costs with actually making a profit without going down the publishing route? So we're talking self-publishing. How is this even possible? And then I started to dawn on me, actually, you're not making money out of books. It's actually those type of books. You're not going to make much at all. It's just a publicity exercise, isn't it?
Exactly. Yeah. And I think it can be a good thing or it can be a bad thing, but it's important to know why you're doing it. Are you doing it to make money, or are you doing it because you want to say that you've published a book or that you can have this thing to show or that you've had an exhibition? So yeah, that's a really important reminder.
It is. Yeah. So what I did a little bit further down that path, so I didn't publish it. I designed it 4 years ago, didn't publish because I thought, well, I can't afford to pay whatever it is, X amount to get it all printed and upfront and not quite know whether I'm going to sell it. Didn't quite have the audience I do now. And I went and revisited that this year. And okay, let's look at this differently. Could we get a very small, very simple, does it have to be big, hardback and fancy? Could we get a small, like a zine type book printed? And then I started looking at the cost and then I was like, no, you can make money on that. That is actually a viable proposition. And it's not coming from a place of greed. It's coming from a place of just needing to earn. And if I'm going to put my time and energy into something, it has to have that outcome. Otherwise, I might as well go and photograph more weddings and properties. So these are very, very small, simple books. And it's beautiful. It's come back beautifully printed. I love it. And I'm going to continue doing that. I mean, I have to sell maybe 100 copies to be in profit. So in my head, I think, well, that's fine. I can do that. So I'm already at 60. So we're doing all right.
That's really good.
Yeah. And it's not a massive project. It's not usually, it's just something I'm doing alongside all the other things I'm doing. So it's got to have perspective. But I like the idea of printed work that people can have in their homes without having to have a big piece. Yeah. So that's one of the things that I think that maybe we can start to approach things a little bit more simply and realistically, you know, and maybe you're looking at other people doing these fabulous things and actually maybe it's not achievable for everybody.
Yeah, definitely. This fall, the Sustainable Photography Program opens back up, and I just know you would love to be a part of it. We go through all the different parts of your photography business piece by piece so that you're left with a long-term sustainable business. That way you can focus your energy on photographing and creating instead of wondering where your next client is coming from. Join the waitlist and get notified when you can join. There are limited spots available, and this year there will be both an English and a Norwegian version running. Don't miss out. Go to ingvildkolnes.com/sustainable to sign up for the waitlist now. I actually always ask what a sustainable business looks like to you. And I'd love to know your thoughts. We've kind of been talking about that the whole time, but I still want to know, like, if you get that direct question, what would you say?
That's a really interesting question, actually. Sustainable to me, it means that it's a viable proposition as a business. That's how I see it. And I think that's very important to me, actually. Probably wouldn't be so important if my mortgage was paid off and I didn't have children. Then it wouldn't be a business to me, I suppose. I love business.
Me too.
Do you? Yeah. Obviously, yeah. Your podcast. Yeah. But I think it's interesting. And I've always started my businesses, I've started from nothing. And I think that's the mark of somebody that can really be good at business. If you can start with literally nothing behind you and build up and have that vision and to be able to build on that, that's just, I always respect people. And I see people doing that all the time. I think, whoa, brilliant. All respect to you. So for me, it's got to be a viable business. It's got to be one that's, I suppose it's authentic, genuine, and yeah, but I would go at that from business perspective, sustainable. So I think that looking at all, I've got actually three separate businesses now. So I have my wedding motion photography business. I have the Quiet Landscapes business, which is separate. And I also created a festival. So I'm starting a festival this year. So I thought of the idea in November. I put it together in December and I launched it in January and it sold out within an hour. So it's very small. It's not very big, but it's the idea behind it was, again, I started with the core concept of it. And the concept was, how do we give a platform and a space for the more quiet creatives in the world that don't always get the chance to speak, but their work is brilliant. And that's what it's gone from there. And it's gone from a place of me getting frustrated at not getting the opportunity to speak. I don't care now, actually, funnily enough, but I was always going, why do I not get chosen for these big shows or for these big things? But it's because I have this quiet, soft nature and business, and my work is very gentle. It's not very techie. And I know that now there are other people like this. There's these amazing photographers. I'm always very careful about how I say this, but there's a lot of women who get overlooked in landscape photography. It's just observation, you know. So I created this festival. I was like, well, we can have this place in the Highlands. We can all come together. And it's a very kind, generous place where we're going to be creative in a very low level, not techie kind of outdoor vibe. So yeah, it's gone really well. And it's sustainable for the first year, just sustainable for the first year. And then next year, I'm planning tripling the capacity. So
it sounds amazing.
Yeah, it should be good. I've got place for 100. I've only got place for 50 people this year. Next year, it'll be 150. So yeah, when you talk of sustainability, I think it's that. It's having growth. It's got possibilities for growth. It can provide an income or it can pay certain people. And it's something that is workable. And that's important to me.
Yeah, I agree with your view on sustainability. To me, it's many things, but it's also a financial thing. Because if you say you have a business, you have to be profitable. And it's one of those things with photography, because a lot of us start, it's just a hobby. It's just something we do. And then we're told by everyone around us, you can't make a living from this. It's not possible to have it as your work. And then we start to believe it. And then our prices are too low. And if there's even a profit, it's so minimal that we can't do anything with it. And we're scared to charge because, you know, we're told we're too expensive and you can't charge this. So yeah, being profitable is really important. And talking about it is also really important.
It is. Yeah. I think a lot of photographers, we hide behind that, don't we? We're not going to tell anybody what we're charging, what we're making. Don't. I think we should all just be a bit more open with everybody, because why wouldn't you? You've got people that you're in the same industry. Can you not just help each other a little bit, you know?
Yeah, I know. But I think it's getting better. I think it used to be more like strictly competitive, like you couldn't even approach another photographer. And now it's more open and there are people who are willing to teach and share and all those things, which is good.
Yeah, that's true, actually. And thinking about my wedding business, it was very small to start. When I say it was a business, it was incredibly low turnover. The kids were little, it was very small. It inched up very, very slowly over the years. Nothing you would be, you know, shouting about, anybody else would be shouting at. But my point was that it was always profitable. The profits rose very slowly every year. I mean, I was barely living on it for a while, you know. It's been tough. Life's been tough because really, when you've got two children and you're trying to work as well, the capacity isn't there. You know, you just physically can't be away that much or be out the house that much. So it was tough, but it taught me a lot. Because at the time when I, just to rewind a little bit, which it's, this does have a bearing on it, when I got divorced, I lost everything, just the circumstances where I lost the house and literally everything we had. So me and the boys were just sort of taken in by my sister for a while. So we were started again from scratch. So I had to look at that business and go, I have to make, even if it's £3,000 this year. And luckily there was a system, the benefit system at the time, that supported me in that as well, because I had the kids so I could carry on working. Otherwise, I wouldn't have been able to. And I would have had to go and just, I don't know, doesn't bear thinking about. But I was very well supported in those early years to enable me to grow that business enough so that we could come off that and then start to be independent from it. So I think that has a bearing on how I view business and how I view money, because I've had hard lessons.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I completely understand that. And again, it's so important to talk about and be mindful of how it all kind of ties together. Like, I just want more people to take themselves or take their business seriously. And I want people to understand that if they don't, they're not just ruining it for themselves. They're potentially ruining it for everyone, because then people get used to photography not being something that you pay for. And, you know, just those general attitudes. But you went from weddings was your main thing, but then it came to a point where you started to say no and do more landscapes. How was that?
It was really hard, because, you know, if you've seen what I've just told you, that it was incredibly hard for me to turn down business. My mindset was always everything, I just take everything, which is probably why you were shocked at how many weddings I was sweating away. But I just couldn't turn down work. So I still battle with it, actually, but probably even just like now I'm starting to go, no, not doing that. Probably just the past 2 years, to be fair, that's an awful long time to come back from that, because I think I know that if I didn't move back from weddings or whatever other commercial work was coming in, I wouldn't have the space or the energy left to put into the new business, which is where it's going. So it's very much a health thing, to be honest with you. I didn't do well health-wise, just from long-term stress problems. So everything that's happened. So I'm very mindful of that. I'm very aware that I have to negotiate that. I have to navigate that in my life. And I have to do everything for my well-being, because very easily I get knocked back. I suffer from, or we did suffer from, chronic migraines and fatigue. So a lot of the kind of things are induced by stress, periods of stress in your life. So if I start to overload myself too much, then it becomes detrimental to my health, and then I can't do the things that I really want to do. So it's a very fine balance. So saying no, it's a really important lesson for me to learn, and definitely learning it more and more. I don't take any of the big mainland weddings on Scottish mainland, because I'm not interested in them, and I don't think that that's where they go. As I've started to drop those, I take more of the elopements on the islands, and the more of those that I do, the more I become known as a specialist in that area, which is beneficial to the business. And the more room I have to do those landscape shoots as well. So
exactly. It's a win-win.
Yeah, yeah. So it's important.
Yeah. No, I think that's good. And I think, you know, as you say, prioritizing your health, it's so important. And too many of us are like, just kind of pushing through, like, no, this is how it works. This is what we have to do. A wedding day has to be this and this long, and just pushing through and probably doing more than we should. So learning to say no is a huge thing. So important.
But also with the length of wedding days and things, I think one of the barriers that I broke down quite early on was going, well, actually, I'm just going to shoot 1 hour. I give you 1 hour of coverage on the beach, and that's it. And being very clear about, I don't think, like, getting ready shots. I don't go back to that set of values. It's not in my set of values. So I just think that the outdoors, the running on the beaches and that sort of thing is what I want to be photographing. So I'm starting to take control of that much more than I ever have done. And that, again, is contributing to my well-being, because I'm only shooting for 1 hour. So it's great. So my energy all goes into the right place. So it's putting your energy into the right place, which is really important.
Yeah, I understand. And I feel the same way. I started off doing just like the shorter shoots. And then I was like, no, I want the whole day. I want to be a part of all of it and get the full story. And then recently I've been like, nope, I don't want to do that anymore. I want to just do the shorter coverage and I just want to do elopements. And this weekend I had one that was just an hour and it was local to me, so I didn't have to travel. And I was like, so nice. And I was like, I forgot how great this feels because my body was still working afterwards. I wasn't stressed. I didn't have a headache. I didn't have that anxiety that I normally get, because where you have your struggles, I struggle with anxiety and getting really nervous and worried. What are they going to think? Am I good enough? Can I do this? And then when it was a shorter amount of coverage, it was just so much lighter. I was just like, okay, this is fine. I've got this. I know what I'm doing here. So yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. So taking control, isn't it? And knowing what you need and then passing that on to the client, and they feel more informed in a way when you're strong about that. So I have just been joined by my puppy, so I hope she doesn't eat the microphone, but we'll just...
So cute.
We'll just keep talking.
We should always have puppies on. It's really nice.
We should, until she starts eating things.
Yeah, it's going to be any day now.
She's actually, I got her because she's going to be traveling with me onto my landscape. We're training her to travel in my van. So the hope is that she comes and joins me on the beaches.
Yeah, I think it's good that you're starting early, because my dog is, as I said earlier, she's 10 years old. And we actually got a van just a couple of months ago and she hates it.
Does she? Oh, what a shame. We started on day one. She's been in the van every day, actually. And I just go on trips now locally and park. So she's got used to it. But again, it's a lifestyle thing. It's a choice I want to make for my future. This is what I want to do. I want to travel around with her and just be on beaches all the time. So it's great.
Yeah, that's perfect.
Great opportunity.
Actually, that fits in very well, because I actually want to ask you about your thoughts when it comes to following your passion, because I know that's something that you like speaking about and this is your passion. So how can others like find the courage to follow their passion, and how to find their passion?
Yeah. So how do you find your passion? It's a funny thing, isn't it? Because you ask people, what do you like? What do you love? And they don't know. It's such a common thing. It's like, well, I don't really have anything that I really like. This is what I do, but I don't really like it. And they're like, yeah, okay, there must be something. We're all humans, aren't we? We all love something. But the truth is that it's just got knocked out of us during adulthood. So when we were little, when we were children, we loved something, didn't we? We had a passion for something. And if you can go back to that time, you can always take yourself back to being that child, find out what it is. What was it? What was it? Can we go back there? Before we got to teenagehood, when your teachers were telling you you had to do this because then you have to fit into this life, so you have to get this job, and then you get married and you have children, then you have to be this perfect parent and you have to go on these holidays and all these things, all these pressures that come into our lives, they sort of slowly wear away at our natural being and who we are as people. So yeah, finding your passion is incredibly difficult thing for a lot of people, but actually what you need to do is refind yourself. So if you can go through that sweeping statement there, isn't it? And it's not an easy thing to do. But if you can do that, if you can, you know, find a way to refind yourself, and you can do that through a process of self-awareness, basically. It's thinking about becoming self-aware. You can start reading about the topics that you love, start, you know, thinking about, oh, well, I'll just think, well, actually, I do love reading books about whatever it is. I started reading and listening to podcasts on sort of inspirational business, I think, would be the thing for me. Women that inspire other women to lead lives where they feel fulfilled and happy. That's my thing, my real passion. I love landscape photography, but actually my real passion in life is to inspire other women, support other women to lead the lives that they want to, and not to get sucked in like I did, because this is what's happened to me. So it's come from that. Not to get sucked in and drowned out by life and children and have everything that's taken away from your real natural being. So that's my passion. I want to do that over and over again. And it doesn't matter what form that takes. I do it subtly through my landscape photography. So that's really, I'm not actually teaching landscape photography. I'm helping people take time for themselves and enjoy being creative. And men as well as women, actually, but women that have lost themselves are a particular point for me. So I'm going around a circle there, but if you wanted to refine that, what you need to do is just go trust your intuition. You know, something will come up and you go, oh, I fancy doing that. Oh, yeah, I really fancy doing that. If I didn't have all these commitments, I'd go and do that. Whether that's going swimming in the sea in the afternoon, and you're thinking you're ridiculous because you're, you know, 15, you don't look perfect in the swim costume. It doesn't matter. Just go and do it. Go and do it. If you want to go mountain biking, if you want to go and book a retreat in wherever in India, that's what I did. Actually, I went to India. So one of the ways I found myself again was, yeah, through going to India. I just booked one day. I went to India by myself and I did an Ayurvedic retreat, and that's transformed my health, but also my confidence of traveling alone and being who I am. So I think sometimes, you know, you see these things and we don't do them because we should do something else.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I think what you're saying now is that so many of us, we get stuck in following a pattern. We see what everyone else is doing and we do the same. And we're not everyone else. Maybe we want to do something completely different. Maybe something else is right for us. So just hearing what someone else is doing, what's worked for someone else, that's huge inspiration that a lot of people can take something away from, because most of us aren't doing what we want to do. We're just doing the thing that we think that we should, and we're not taking any chances. We're just doing something. And it's kind of like what we talked about earlier. We only have this one life and we need to do the most out of it, because if not, what's the point?
Yeah, that's really powerful, that, isn't it? We are, most people, playing safe and they're following a path, a life that's been put out for them, and not thinking what they really want to do. And that doesn't mean that you have to like sell your house and go backpacking around the world at the age of 45, whatever. It doesn't mean you have to do that, but it does mean that you should really take time for the things that you want to do.
Margaret will of course be right back, and you'll hear us talking more about landscape photography and following your passion in just a little bit. But I just wanted to ask you if you have left a review for the podcast yet. I would just love to know that you've listened to it and what you think of it and what you want more of. So you can add a review in the podcast player now, and also send me a DM on Instagram as well. I probably won't know that you've left a review unless you tell me about it. And I just always love it when you message me on Instagram to say hi or to give feedback or ask questions. You'll find me at Ingvild Kolnes on Instagram. Back to Margaret now.
Just for instance, my partner is an engineer and we built a workshop 6 years ago in his garden so he can go out into the workshop and build his engineering stuff. He's got, I don't know, he's got, you know, he makes things from metal and builds rally cars and engines and stuff like that. But I think it's really important for me, for us in a relationship, for me to say, go and do that. That's your thing. That's when he feels lit up. That's when he goes, he's happy. Even though we're not together, so you're giving the other person the grace, well, not the grace, you know, not even permission, because you shouldn't even have to do that.
Encouragement, maybe.
Encouragement, yeah, and support to go and do the thing that lights them up. And equally, I'm off in my van and I just love that. So we should encourage these things more often. Now, does it matter? Does it make a difference if he builds his rally car and he races around some, I don't know what he does, racing around some tracks in the forest? Driving back home again with a car that's really dirty. To me, that's like, well, yeah, okay. He loves it. Does it matter? He's following his passion. I'm following my passion of traveling around the islands and photographing. We all have different things. Everyone's got a different thing. And doesn't matter how silly or childish it might seem, probably more childish, the better it is for you. And you don't know where that leads, because, I mean, my passion for traveling around the islands has led to a business. This is what I'm doing now full time. If I hadn't had the courage to say, I want to go off and do this for a few days. And that wasn't easy, because I had to try and find somewhere to put the kids to. I was always having to make excuses out. I'll be back in a day, you know, just keep them. It was tough, really tough. But if I hadn't had the courage to do that for years on that intuitive kind of feeling, this is what I enjoy doing, I wouldn't be sitting here today talking to you probably.
Yeah. And also what you were saying, like, maybe your passion isn't something that you're ever going to make a living from. Maybe it has nothing to do with business or money, but you should still do it.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to connect that in my head as I was talking, because you're right, for your well-being, because we're existing here. We have to do things that we love. Otherwise, we wither away and we suffer either physically or mentally. One or the other will happen if you don't do the things that make you feel happy. So, yeah, and the chances are very high that if you do the thing that makes you happy and you think it's not going to earn you a living, it might do. It might do. So
it might, yeah.
Yeah, it might do. Maybe you don't want it to, maybe you don't need it to. But if you're looking for something out there, just go and do the thing you love. For instance, just a quick example for you, I was a few years ago, I started experimenting with going underwater with my phones, just because I'm always photographing by the sea. I thought, I'll get in. I love swimming. Let's take the phones in the water, because it's easy. You know, you just get your iPhone in a housing and you put it under. And it was like, oh, this is quite good. So I was just having a good time with it, you know. Next year in 2023, I've got an exhibition of underwater, overwater landscapes in Harris that's come from that. That's sort of 4 years on of just playing. I was just playing. I didn't think, oh, I'm going to go and jump in the water and then I'll produce a great body of work and have an exhibition. I thought, I quite like doing this. It's great fun. I like being in a wetsuit in the water. So,
Yeah, you never know what might come of it. And I think it's a little bit interesting, because sometimes you see the people who are succeeding and doing really well, they had no idea what they were getting into, basically. And other times it's the opposite. It's someone that's really like, they have their mind really set on where they're going and they do everything to get there. And I don't think one is right or wrong. It's just different. So I guess just following, in both cases, they're following their dreams and just doing what they feel they should be doing.
Yeah. I mean, I think the difference is the people that put the work in. You'll never get there if you don't put the work in. So I think you have to have that kind of logical pattern of just realizing that it's hard work. If you want to make a business from it, it's hard work. You have to put the effort in. You have to build and build and build and keep building. You have to be quite resilient as well, because there are times, and I still feel this. I feel this, you know, I don't know, every so often I think, oh, I'm no good. Nobody's looking at my work. Or that person didn't like my work. Oh, you know, all of that nonsense. You have to build that resilience to get over that and just to keep going regardless. And all the failures, how many failures do you get through before you get somewhere? You have to be able to get over those things as well. So there's probably a degree in the people who are sort of want to be somewhere but don't really want to put the effort in.
Yeah, there's probably a lot of those.
I think so. I think there probably is, yeah, underestimating the amount of work that goes involved into it.
Yeah. Because it is a lot of work running your own business, and especially a creative business, because it's not like someone needs to have their photo taken, or they have to, you know, have something nice on their wall, or they have to do that workshop. It's something they want to do. So it's a big difference between doing that and something that, you know, if you're producing food, or, you know, you're a plumber or something like that, that's something that people have to pay for no matter what. But what we do, it's fueled by our creativity, and we're dependent on someone just wanting it.
Yeah. And as you were talking about that, you're absolutely right, isn't it? It's a luxury. It's not a need. But I think one of the things that if you're wanting to promote yourself or promote your business, you know, if you're thinking, oh, I'm not, how can I be different to everybody else? I think the difference is the person. I think there's a million better photographers than me. I don't think I'm the best photographer, but there are, you know, there's better wedding photographers, better landscape photographers. What's the difference? Why is somebody going to buy from me and not from those people? And I believe it's showing yourself, sharing a little bit of yourself. People buy from the person. They want me at the wedding because I'm actually nice, and I'm kind of not in the face, and that's what they want. They want somebody that'll stand back and be discreet and, you know, intuitive, I suppose, in the way they shoot. And in the landscape, they want somebody that'll help them, understand them maybe. And I share a lot of myself in my profile and my everything that I put out online, and people connect to that. So that's the difference, I think.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I actually mentioned this quite a lot on my podcast as well, like, because a lot of photographers, they get really disappointed. They want it to be all about their photos. They want their photos to speak for themselves. Like, it should be enough that their website is full of their photos. And I'm like, no, you need some text. You need to show a little bit of who you are. And just trying to get that out there, that it's you that gets booked. It's not your camera or your photo skills. It's you as the person, because they want you. So if you can let people get to know you, then you're much better off.
I think people don't do that because they're a bit scared of showing their vulnerabilities. But as soon as you do that, people connect with you. If I said something today and somebody's gone, oh, I felt like that once, they're connecting with me, because that's natural. We all feel like it's not shiny, the world of social media where everybody's having a great holiday. You see that a lot, don't you? I saw someone the other day and it was a little reel about somebody who was like living their best life. Well, this is what they call it anyway. the best life in some resort in Greece, and they're working on the road and they're having a great time. They're obviously earning loads of money because they don't have to, they just have to sit about eating oysters. It's not real. That's not reality. Nobody's going to look at that and go, oh yeah, I connect with that person, because nobody connects with that person. We connect with the person that's struggling with their mental health or struggling with anxiety or, you know, feeling a bit worried about their photography, but doing it anyway. You know, that's real. And the more that we show up like that in any form, the better, I think, for people's well-being in general.
Yeah, absolutely. Because if not, we'll just think that everyone else... That's something actually that I see a lot in photographers, especially wedding photographers. Like a lot of photographers are sharing like, oh, I'm fully booked, I'm so busy. And then you have someone else thinking like, why are they all booked and I'm not? And it's not necessarily true. And maybe to some people, like 5 weddings means, oh, I'm fully booked, and they go talking about that. And to someone else, you know, they might have 10 and they go feeling like, oh, I don't have anything yet. And just those, I don't know, subtle brags makes other people feel bad. I'm not saying don't do them. I'm just saying that if you're hearing that someone else is doing well, you don't know what that means to them. And you should only worry about yourself and how you're doing.
It's so true, isn't it? I mean, I sometimes, you see landscape photographers, so I interview quite a few landscape photographers now, and you sort of see, oh, they've got this shop, and other people are coming to me saying, well, I'd like to sell prints, and these people are selling prints. And I said, are they selling prints? Do you know that for a fact? Where's the information? It looks great. And they might be telling you they are, but they're not necessarily. So yeah, I think removing that sort of shininess from everything and just helping other people in an authentic way is so important. And I think that anxiety and, you know, depression and mental health is increasingly deteriorating because of social media, because people are believing things and there's so much nonsense fed to you. But if we can use it in a more positive way in terms of creating community and supporting each other, then that's fabulous. So the more that we talk about things like this, even on this podcast, you know, it's great. And everyone should just remember that they're not alone in this. We've all been there. There's been times when I've been like, I've got to shut my business. I'm just going to go and, I don't know, wash dishes for a living instead, because this isn't working. Yeah, so we've all been there. Just about remembering that that's normal.
Yeah, I don't think I know anyone who hasn't considered quitting at some point. Probably many times. I definitely have, like, what am I doing? This is never going to work. But then, you know, it just comes and goes. And overall, it just has to work and you have to be comfortable and happy. And that's the most important thing. But you can't expect to always feel great or that to have everything always go your way, to book everyone, to always get what you want. It just doesn't work like that.
No, I think, do you know, one of the things that I did when I was a wedding photographer for many, many years was not look at any other wedding photographers. I just wasn't in that circle. And people would say to me, oh, have you seen these loads of new wedding photographers in the area? I was like, are they? I don't know that. And they're worrying about this. They're spending, you know, a long time worrying about that fact that they've got this competition. And I'm not. I'm just concentrating what I do.
I actually do the same, where I don't want to follow other people who do kind of what I do. Because I don't want to feel like I can't do something because I've already seen it somewhere. So it's best not to see it. Or I don't want to feel like someone else is doing better than me, because it just brings me down, even though I know it shouldn't. It just does. Yeah,
it does. I mean, you could look at some really bad wedding photographers that make you feel better. I did that occasionally. I used to do that occasionally because I was like, oh yeah, I'm so much better than them.
That is a good tip. Yeah, I could start doing that. Yeah.
Best tip of the podcast.
Yeah, that's the takeaway. But actually, what is something that you would suggest doing if someone wants to get into landscape photography specifically?
I would be looking at gaining inspiration. I wouldn't be thinking about the landscape work. I'd be looking at trying to find your own thing. So I wouldn't be looking at everybody else seeing what they're doing. You need to find your own thing. You need to find your own purpose. And that's where it will start. That's a big thing. But in order to do that, where do we go for inspiration? So we just talked about not looking at other wedding photographers. That goes into landscape as well. So don't look at other landscape photographers. So, you know, you can be aware of what's happening in the market. You know, you've got to kind of keep that awareness, but you're not examining them. I know landscape photographers that say, I actually know of somebody who collated a list of everybody that was running a workshop to the Isle of Harris in 2022 with the dates and how many places they'd filled and the prices and everything. It's like, oh, you must have spent 4 hours doing that. You could have used your time a bit better. But yeah, don't do that. Don't do that. Look around for inspiration in other ways. This is what I do and this is what I've always done. So I'm looking, I'm listening to a lot of podcasts, not necessarily photographer podcasts, maybe inspirational business, motivational speakers I think are fantastic. There's people like Evan Carmichael has been a great one for me. He inspires me all the time. It's nothing to do with photography. Robin Sharma, I'm just trying to think of a few, but lots of podcasts like that. Art Juice is a great podcast just for listening to art. There's two ladies who have a conversation on art and it's about painting, but it's a creative space, isn't it? It's a podcast, books, and I think books. I think if you're not reading books, okay, it could be audio books, but I like a good paperback. You're missing a big trick if you're wanting to get into any business or landscape photography. And now that might seem illogical to you, but not necessarily landscape photography. You don't need to be reading about the technical thing. Read about the subjects that you enjoy. My bookshelf's filled with inspirational or things about silence, solitude, things about introversion, nature, being out in nature, well-being, water, all those things. Start reading, consuming that sort of positive content. Those are probably the big things. And then also taking space, making space is a big thing, probably one of the biggest things. Creating space for those thoughts to come into your head. Because if you don't take that space, you never get those inspirational thoughts. So you'll never start to think about your own path. So taking walks, retreats are amazing if you can, but not everybody can afford that or afford the time. But retreats are a great thing to do. Even just walks, even just a 20-minute walk a day. Listen to a podcast or don't let your brain take over and just have that space to think. That's where it all starts, not with f-stops or looking at other what everyone else is doing.
No, I can believe that. And actually, I think when you talked about your festival earlier, I would think that's something like that, or going to an actual workshop and just meeting other people who enjoy some of the same things. That must also be like really good for your creativity and just getting some new perspectives as well.
Yeah, bouncing ideas off other creatives are in that same mindset as you. I think that my hope for the festival is that that's what it'll be. It'll be like a big retreat in the woods because it's in the woods. And all the other people that are there, creatives, are not necessarily professional photographers. They're not necessarily photographers. They're just all in that creative space. So some of the what I've done is probably purposefully just created something that I've just talked about what people should be doing. So I've got people doing, we've got a psychotherapist coming along doing, you know, healing through creativity, that sort of thing, bookmaking, iPhonography, this sort of, we're even doing wild swimming, all these things. If you can find something that you're interested in, you might not be interested in a wild swimming retreat. You might be more interested in, I don't know, like, something like a little beach retreat for a couple of days, yoga retreat, those sort of things. It all gives you the time and the space for your own well-being, but also for your own headspace. That's where your real ideas come in. That's where you start to go, actually, you know, you're sitting there and your head's empty and you've had this time for yourself and you go, that's what I need to do. This is when, I tell you, when I created the festival, and I remember the moment because I was stood in my van cooking my dinner. I remember where I was standing and I was in some forest car park and I'd just taken the afternoon out by myself and I'm going to go to the forest, go for a walk, have some lunch and then come home. And that's when I was standing there cooking my dinner going, we need something that's when all my best ideas, I started writing a book. I was in a retreat in Italy a few weeks ago, started writing a new book, biography. I don't know when I'll get time to come back from that and not carried on because I haven't got the headspace. So interesting, but that's when all my best ideas come, when I take these times away. So I'd encourage anybody who's got, wants to change anything or do anything new to take time out.
Yeah. Oh, that's a good idea. What about if you could recommend something to the person who's listening about building a sustainable business? Like, what's something that you would recommend doing to build a sustainable business?
I think you just always need to be thinking, is this viable? Does this make financial sense? Sometimes it doesn't, because sometimes you have to start at the beginning and you have to go, I've got to do this, I've got to invest in this. And then when it builds, it will be sustainable. So when I started doing like my weddings, you know, you usually go out with somebody else and you learn. You start shooting weddings at a lower rate. I don't think there's a problem with that. I've never had it. I know there's a lot of advice, never do that. And you should always go in at the highest level. I don't buy that. I think that starting a little bit lower, until you've got your confidence and you've got your portfolio, I think that's perfectly acceptable. Obviously, with the view to be building that into a very profitable business. So we're not just playing at this and going, well, I'm going to go out and do this on the weekend because I quite like to be at weddings. That doesn't make sense. But if you want to do it to build, I would also reach out to other photographers and ask them. It's amazing how many people don't reach out, isn't it? And say, can you help? I mean, I could say no. Oh, you could say no. Everybody with more experience could say, don't have the time or don't really want to be spending the time doing that. But then maybe they will. You know, there's a lot of people out there that are willing to help. I would also think about business skills. And business skills to me are just, it's logical thinking. It's not anything fancy. It's just logical thinking. If you're going out for X amount of hours. So for an example, here's an example. A big wedding, 12 hours you could be at, you get, I don't even know what people are charging now. You could say, let's just pick a figure. Like we're going with £2,000 for a 10-hour wedding. I can't do that in my head. Is that £200 an hour? Yes. £200 an hour. Okay. So a lot of people say, well, I'm only going to shoot big weddings because it's £2,000 per day. I don't want to shoot a small wedding because I need that £2,000 a day. A small hour wedding, again, I don't know what people are charging. I'm charging like maybe £700. That's £700 an hour. And I know we've got the time traveling and the time being there. Okay. But to me, in my head, it's more logical to do for my well-being to do lots of those little weddings than two of those big weddings. So business isn't always what it's taught, what we're taught, or what seems logical in business. To me, it's just, it's how it works with your life and it's how profitable it is. It's got to be profitable. So I don't know, do you agree with that?
That it has to be profitable?
No, that you have to view it from your own perspective and you've got to kind of, it's got to be profitable, but you've got to always look at where you are in your business and where you are in your life and adapt that kind of business sense to it. So for me, those small weddings, much better than an all-day wedding.
No, I absolutely agree with that. And I also think that's why it's a little bit, I guess, dangerous is a bad, it's a big word, but it's a little bit risky to look at what everyone else is charging and then base your prices on that because they don't have your life. They don't have the amount of time you have. They don't have the expenses that you have. You don't know if they're even getting booked. So that you should always like base your prices on how much you want to work, what your expenses are, how much money you want to make, and just don't worry so much about what everyone else is doing. Of course, like you said before, check out the general market and make sure that you're not doing something insane and get some help when you're figuring it out because unless you know what you're doing, it's easy to get a little bit off track. But yeah, as I said before, I used to do only full-day weddings and now I want to do shorter ones. And of course, the shorter ones are priced a lot less than the big ones, but it still makes sense to do them because they demand less energy of me. And I would rather fill my time doing other things than doing the bigger weddings. So yeah, you have to find the right balance and do the things that make sense at that time.
I'm glad that made sense because I wasn't sure whether I was just talking nonsense there, but that's my...
No, it did make sense. And you're allowed to change. You're allowed to do things differently. You're allowed to change the kind of things you photograph or the kind of packages you offer and everything. Your prices, you can change everything.
Yeah. Yeah. I totally agree with you there. Yeah.
Yeah. So Margaret, if whoever's listening wants to keep learning from you, where can they find you?
Too many places. I tend to build a lot of websites, but actually that's what served me well, actually, just on another point, because I do have a lot of specific websites for different things. But mostly I'm on Instagram at Margaret Soraya. I'm also on YouTube a little bit, just under Margaret Soraya again. And I'm just starting on YouTube. I don't have a big channel, but I enjoy it and we'll be developing that one. So mostly Instagram, YouTube, and I run the online membership is Creative Haven. But my main website is Quiet Landscapes.
And you also have a podcast.
Oh, yes. I've forgotten about that. So many things I forget about, though. I have a podcast. Thanks for reminding me. I have a podcast. It's called Quiet Landscapes with Margaret Soraya.
Yeah. I'll be sure to link to all of that in the show notes. And I have to check out your YouTube channel. That's really interesting.
Thank you.
And actually, I also want you to mention your festival because that sounds amazing. We have to make sure to link to that as well.
Yeah, so that's Creative Light. I didn't do such a good job of naming everything. You know, he's supposed to brand everything and like easy to find things. But I think I've just evolved so much over the years. It's kind of like, but anyway, we've got Creative Light for the festival. It's got its own website as well.
Perfect. That's excellent. I'm going to link to it all. And thank you so much. This has been amazing.
It was lovely to meet you. Thank you.
Yeah, you too. Thanks for listening to Sustainable Photography. Head over to Instagram at Ingvild Kolnes to tell me what you want future episodes to be all about. Check out the show notes over at ingvildkolnes.com/podcast. You can learn more about the Sustainable Photography program and sign up for the waitlist there. To get more of this content, make sure you subscribe to the podcast and leave a review. Your support makes all the difference. Talk soon.